We're back.
Peter Payden is here, Executive Director of the Columbia Land Conservancy. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
First of all, I wanted to say that I got your, I guess it's the newsletter by email today.
Oh, yes.
And see that you have 7 conservation easements were added to your holdings in December.
Yes.
And can you tell us a little bit about those?
Well, I can tell you a little bit about them. Several of them actually were projects that we did in conjunction with our friends at Scenic Hudson and were funded in part by the federal government. And because of certain rules about the federal government's approach to these things, we're actually not allowed to talk about the specifics at the present time. I'm not at liberty to discuss. It's because there's several other projects in the works, and they want to control the timing of the public announcement. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a few other projects coming down the pike in the next month or two that have been approved and that still has to be completed, the paperwork, and there's a coordination about specifying the details. But
does it have to do with contiguous parcels of land and how that might affect their property values?
No, not really. I'm honestly not sure why they have this rule. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but they fund together with Scenic Hudson some really wonderful farmland protection projects where farm families are paid for the development rights. And it's a great program. We've been working with Scenic Hudson on these kinds of things for the last, well, in general, for quite a while, but for the last 2 or 3 years, we've had a very concerted effort. We've done, the year before last, I think we did 5 farms in Columbia County, about 800 acres. And these are some really wonderful projects, and we will very happily and eagerly tell the world about them, probably in a couple of months when the whole thing is completed. But we also closed on several other easements that I happily can tell you about,
when you say development rights, of course you mean not to develop, right?
Yes. What happens is a private landowner, a farmer, or anybody else that owns land that has, the way we would say it, conservation value, scenic, good farmland, good forest, habitat, can convey away to us the development rights. Sometimes they usually retain some, but they give away essentially development rights that would lead to over development of the property to the extent that it would diminish the conservation values. So, if somebody owns a couple of hundred acres of land, they could have a choice of either saying, I want to have no further development whatsoever other than the house and garage that are there now, or they probably could say, I want to reserve the right to build 1 or 2 houses, and we would think about where it would be appropriate to do that. But they couldn't reserve the right to build 12 houses on 200 acres of land, at least not here in Columbia County. So that's an agreement that is made between a landowner and us. They can do that voluntarily, in which case it is a donation, and there is typically a financial incentive because the diminished value of the land, usually it's
reduces
diminished.
The taxes.
No, it doesn't.
No?
Not at all. What it does is the IRS, the Internal Revenue Code, because Congress arbitrarily decided this, deems that to be a charitable contribution. So they get a tax deduction in the year of the donation and for a certain number of years after. And that's really the primary financial incentive. The state of New York gives landowners a tax credit. That's a great thing. That's a dollar-for-dollar credit on your taxes, with a cap of $5,000 under a certain formula to anyone who owns land that is subject to a donated conservation easement forever. You don't even have to be the party that made the easement. You could have bought the land from somebody else. But the actual real estate taxes on the property are not, as a general rule, affected by this at all. So that's what, when people say they're conserving their land or they're putting the land in the conservancy, that's usually what happens. And so it can be by donation, which is common for us, or if the money can be found, we can buy it, which is a great thing for the landowner. They actually get paid. And that's what happens with some of these farmland protection projects. We have another project like this up in New Lebanon that we've been working on for several years that's also federally funded, where they may Congress has actually appropriated the money to pay four substantial landowners there, three of which are nonprofit institutions, to purchase the development rights on beautiful forest and ridgeline habitat land along the Massachusetts-New York border. So occasionally money can be found to do it. But in our case, because we don't have our own pot of millions of bucks to do this with, usually our conservation projects are donated. And in December, we closed on, I might forget them all, at least four projects where people donated easements to us on farmland or other types of land, which is in various places around the county. And by the way, we also closed on a number of projects during the year before December, so these were not our only projects for the year.
Well, it said these were seven transactions that permanently protect 780 acres.
Right, that was the
Month of December.
That was the December
alone.
One, yeah.
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 It's wonderful. Well, yeah. We look forward to hearing more
about
them when this can be disclosed.
They're great projects. I mean, we do some of these every year. We do some more some year than others. It all depends. You know, it's a big decision for a landowner. And some landowners get in touch with us and know they want to do it, and we can do something in 3 or 4 months. There are some landowners we've talked about doing this with for 10 years before they finally close. Mm-hmm. It's a serious decision, and we're not interested in twisting people's arms to do it. It's not the right thing for everybody. A lot of considerations, family considerations, and you know, ownership of the land and people's financial status and condition all come into play. But it is a great device. And actually, with the close of this year, we now have easements have conserved, I think it's almost 24,000 acres of private land in the county.
Wow.
Yeah.
I heard someplace the other day that there was... it might have been in the North Country, a county that was trying to figure out how to get more tax money out of these conservation easements. Mm. Is that a threat that comes your way at all?
Well, there's a lot of talk about this sort of thing, and it's sort of a piece with the broader conversation you hear when people say, you know, we have too many nonprofits in town,
right,
and there's not enough, you know, a lot of land taken off the tax rolls. You know, in the global sense, there's a lot of serious issues there. A lot of organizations who get organized as nonprofits, question is, are they nonprofits and all of that? You
right.
know, some of the political action committees and so forth. But there is a lot of misunderstanding about the work that organizations like ours do. Many, many people are of the view, and it's understandable, you know, that we reduce, when people conserve land, it reduces their property taxes, and therefore everybody else in town is paying more. In fact, it does not reduce property taxes in all but the most rare circumstances. Some people think we're taking land off the tax rolls entirely. That's not true. It could be true. We do own some land. We own about 2,500 acres of land, most of which is our public preserves. Because we are a nonprofit, we are entitled to tax-exempt status, mm-hmm. and we file for tax-exempt status. Our policy in Columbia County is... we make voluntary payments in lieu of taxes on all property that we own that for the public conservation areas to the towns in which those properties are located.
You do this by pre-arrangement?
We just do it because we believe it's a good thing to do. We are entitled not to pay any taxes on them. And in fact, we do not pay school taxes, and we don't pay the county portion of the tax. We don't pay school taxes. You know, we have a pretty large education program. We do an awful lot in that line, and we kind of feel we've, in a sense, paid at the office in that regard. But we do pay the same amount that towns were getting in their real estate tax when we acquire the property. We continue to pay, and of course, we also make payments to the local fire departments and ambulance and all of that
right.
kind of thing. So, you know, we think it's important to be a good citizen and part of the community.
It doesn't lock the community into that property tax level, does it? In other words, if property taxes go up, it goes up for even the land under conservancy.
Well, no, not necessarily. What we've done is we've paid the amount of money that was on the tax rolls when we took title mm-hmm. to the land. I don't actually know how we would go about
it. No, I don't mean the nonprofit ones.
Yeah.
I mean the...
Oh, for the privately owned land? Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
So they have anything that
full,
happens, right.
full
they,
payment.
They reassessed anything can happen.
Correct. You see, under the law, and it's actually, it's a little hard to state this exactly accurately, and I never quite remember how it goes. But the basic deal is when, and under New York law, when property is assessed, it is not, it is supposed to be assessed at the value at which it is currently used, not at the value at which it could be used if you built 25 condominiums on it.
Sure.
So if you've got 200 acres with a house and barn, or, you know, with a lovely house on top of a hill, even if you could build five more houses there, and even if that is part of the actual economic value of the land, the assessed value is supposed to be a nice house on a hill with 150 acres. So the easement really shouldn't even make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, on top of all that, assessors have a tremendous amount of discretion, and they're not generally very inclined to reduce taxes. So they would be pretty disinclined to do it anyway. There have been a couple of cases where people have won reduced assessments, but the facts are always pretty unusual.
Hmm. I'm just wondering what you said, Ellen, about communities that try to that resent this because of the tax burden. I wonder if it's just because they want endless development and figure this is land that's no longer in the picture. Or
no, I think they want more money.
I think it's based on misconception. I mean, there was a person who ran for office in the county recently in the last election who was defeated, but one of his platforms was, let's tax these properties the Conservancy is taking off the tax rolls. It was a platform based upon inaccurate facts.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of feeling, there's people feel strapped for money. There is resentment about property owners, nonprofits not paying taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I don't think there should be. I think it makes sense for nonprofits not to pay taxes. I mean, in theory.
Well, even there, there's a limit to what they can do. I mean, if they're using the properties they own for profit-making things, they still pay taxes.
They need to be using the property for purposes for which they were put to.
This is a common misconception in this town about someone who's a large property owner who, in fact, does pay property taxes on most of his.
I see.
But that's a whole other issue.
Yeah. I mean, a nonprofit organizations, almost all of them, in the classic sense anyway, are doing work that somebody has decided is socially significant, and probably in many cases, if they weren't doing it, the government should be, or in an ideal world, it would be. So nonprofits are doing a lot of public work, and it's an awful lot more efficient way to get it done than for the government to be paying for everything. So the fact that they get a tax break, it makes a lot of sense, it seems to me, and a tremendous, billions and billions of dollars worth of services are provided to social services and all kinds of other services, educational services, that if it wasn't happening, we'd either have a very poor society or the government would be doing
it for a lot
more money.
That was demonstrated here locally when there was an uproar about nonprofits not paying property taxes. And then it turned out the major nonprofits were such things as the hospital, essential things.
Yeah.
Mental health organizations.
That's right.
Museums or even.
If you go look at the list there, it's almost always the case. And then there are also a lot of churches, a lot of religious institutions, a lot of sportsmen's clubs, which I believe
we
are
have a lot of government buildings here in Hudson that don't
and
pay
taxes. These are important institutions to the community.
Yeah. Well.
So anyway, thanks for the plug about our recent newsletter. We did just complete a year. It's always the end of a year is always a big deal. Deals have to close. We close our fiscal year. We're mm-hmm. still adding that all up, but it seems as though we had a pretty successful year in that respect as well. So we also just completed a new strategic plan this past year. We've reconfigured our staff. We've had a very, very active year. We've added several really good new trustees. It's really been a busy but very productive year.
Do people often come to you, or do you seek out properties?
It's a little bit of both. That's an interesting question. I think historically we've been sort of understated, and for the most part we've tried to operate by responding to inquiries. I mean, we certainly try to make the community aware of what we do and encourage people to think about doing it. But I think we've always been very sensitive about the risk of people thinking that we maybe have a map on our wall with pins in it, with a picture of their property on it, And I sometimes get jokingly introduced to people at parties, this is Peter Payton, you'll see, he wants your farm, And it's all very funny, but people are sensitive about that. I think personally, I think that we would be well advised, and I think we're making plans to try to be a little more aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
Not by arm twisting, but by identifying the properties that really do have significant conservation value and kind of thinking more strategically about, you know, if we got limited resources, if in an ideal world, where would we really like to be operating, and then try to see if the people are interested.
So when you say you try to identify those properties with more conservation value, what are those? What makes something have more mm-hmm. conservation value?
Well, that's a great question too.
See, Ellen, I told you I could ask good questions. You told me to shut up. No,
we have a strategic conservation plan that we spent quite a bit of time on about 5 years ago, and our first resolve coming out of this last year is that we're going to revisit it. It's actually quite a complex question. The way we have currently got it, look at it, is we have identified a number of significant kind of conservation values, such as good farmland, good agricultural soils, healthy forests or habitat, important water resources, wetlands, streams, river corridors, if property is over an aquifer, that's of importance, and scenic value, which is a really squirrely one because mm-hmm. it's very subjective, but it's actually written into the law.
Yeah, this new concept of ridgelines comes in?
Well,
or relatively new, I should say.
Certainly, the ridgeline protection issue is a really volatile issue mm-hmm. in the community, and a number of communities have wrestled with it. It's not something that we have anything directly to do with in terms of our work. Certainly, for example, if a person came to us and said they wanted to conserve their land, we do a pretty substantial master plan for building. What are the values on the property? Where are the areas where nothing really should be allowed to happen because it's really sensitive? If someone wanted to reserve a house site, where should it go? Where would be appropriate? We would not put a house in the middle of a productive farm field, even if there was a pretty view from there and that sort of thing. We would not put a house on top of a hill. We wouldn't let that happen. We don't think people shouldn't have nice views, but you can design a place so you can have a nice view and not inflict your view mm-hmm. on the entire community. And if you've ever been to Glendale, California, which was very beautiful 150 years ago, it's a whole lot of gorgeous hills with about 28 houses on every hill, and it's not that pretty.
Well, you can see it on going south if on Route 9. If you look up Mount Marino, you see there are these little chunks just kind of in their houses there.
Yep, it happens. It happens. Well, in any event, it's a very, very sensitive issue because people are understandably really sensitive about being told what they can do with their property. And there's also a lot of misunderstanding about this stuff, too, I think.
Have you ever worked in coordination with groups like Olana in terms of preserving their view shed, as they call it? I mean, is that an issue that...
Well, we have a perfectly cordial relationship with Olana. We held a couple of easements on the Mount Marino property. Scenic Hudson has been a much more active partner with them in all of that. And we hold some easements around there, but Scenic Hudson has, it's part of their, they operate in the towns that border the river. So Livingston and it's also where we operate, but where we overlap is in those river towns. And Scenic Hudson, is a fine organization. They differ from us very significantly in one respect, which is that they have a lot of money. They're very fortunate. They were bequeathed a very great deal of money by some conservation-minded people. So they actually have a fund that allows them to purchase easements on properties that they think are worth doing. Most landowners would rather sell their easement than donate it, so... Scenic Hudson has done a lot of that work, and if you're trying to be really intentional about a certain area, it obviously helps to be able to buy the easement and not to ask somebody to donate it. So they're just a little better suited mm-hmm. to all of that.
Have you ever rejected properties that
yes.
people? Yeah.
Yes.
What kind of reasons come up? Just you don't think it's...
Well, these agreements are they're a creature of law. And mm-hmm. where people want to donate them and get a tax deduction as a result, there is a federal statute and a fairly detailed federal regulation, Treasury reg, that defines the circumstances where it can be done. Critically important is they're done forever, which is, logically almost an absurd idea. But they're permanent. They're very, very difficult to undo, and they're very hard to change. And in order to be... an appropriate candidate for a permanent conservation easement, there has to be some meaningful conservation value. I think it's fairly obvious that any old 50-acre piece of land isn't necessarily worth a literal perpetual burden that it can never be developed. So there has to be some reason. We have very detailed assessments of these properties, and we articulate in writing what their conservation value is, what kind of habitat is there, what kind of vegetation is found, what kind of water resources are there, how it reflects values that are embodied in the local comprehensive plan or in the state open space plan. And if we can't make a case in writing that this land actually has significant conservation qualities, we wouldn't want to take a perpetual easement on it, and we shouldn't, and it shouldn't be qualified for that under the law. It's a lot of work for us once we take an easement. These aren't, people get a charitable contribution, but they're giving a great gift to the community. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of work. We have a perpetual relationship with whoever owns that land from now until the end of time. We visit the property. We try to be helpful to landowners in taking good care of it. We have to be sure the easement terms are complied with. So we have a real responsibility, and we don't want to just take easement on any old piece of land.
Is this a federal law? Is it state law also?
The state law allows something called a conservation easement to take place.
Mm-hmm.
This was a device unknown in law 100 years ago, not part of the common law, mm-hmm. as we say. But the state law is really pretty general. It doesn't have a lot of detail, and it never got fleshed out as was intended. So the main driver of the construct that we all have to deal with is the Treasury regulations and the Internal Revenue Code, which could be a little more specific and clear, of course, than it is, but it's a lot more specific than the state law, and it defines the terms on which a perpetual easement, the conditions and terms on which it can be created.
You know, we were talking about the power line issue in the state earlier, and I'm wondering if... Do you ever come across properties that have previous easements built in for such things as underground electric or gas lines?
Oh yeah.
And does that prevent you from getting them, or do you?
No.
You hold on.
We have a number of properties that are privately owned properties under easement with us, through which there are power lines, and we own one of our conservation areas as a power line going through it. That's a part of the given of the landscape, and it doesn't necessarily deprive the property of all conservation value. Mm-hmm. We have an easement on an extremely productive and substantial farm that is comprised of extremely fine ag soils and a very productive farm. It happens to have a power line going through it. One might wish it doesn't, but it does, and that hasn't undermined, you know, that didn't make it ineligible for an easement. And, you know, utility easements, underlying easements, that sort of thing are very common.
Would you ever negotiate to allow new easements on properties that don't have them?
You mean new utilities?
Yeah.
Well, you know, we would prefer, it's not up to us. It's not up to us. When the power company wants to do a new power line, as you know, this is going on now in several places in the county, there is a statutory proceeding for them to kind of declare the public need, and then it gets decided by a body called the Public Service Commission whether, A, there is a public need, and if there is, they have a right of eminent domain, and a conservation easement, although it's permanent and very difficult to change, can be undone or diminished by eminent domain. Mm. So we can't just put our foot down and say no. We certainly would try to negotiate to see that it not happen, or that it happened with a minimum of disturbance, or is there not some other alternative? But it's not entirely up to us.
Did you hear the governor's State of the State address yesterday?
No, I didn't.
Well, one of the things he was proposing is that the state give incentives to power companies to bury the lines or to do the things that will...
Yes, and that, I'm sure, I bet a lot of money, that's a reflection of the contention that's arisen over his energy highway project, in part, right here in Columbia County.
That's right.
Where people are very, very upset about the idea of tacking another, 125 feet on the already substantial power corridor, and they're saying, gee, isn't there some way that they can do what they need mm-hmm. to do without taking more land. They already have an awful lot of land, and put it underground or put some more wires on the same poles or put some new poles up in the same, you know, there's a lot yeah. of different technologies. And I think that that sounded to me like a sort of nod in the direction of, let's try to see if there's not some way to do this without without going down that road. He also said, I should say, in his written version, which was considerably longer than his stated version, he threw a shout out to one of our projects. He talked about the need for the state to support open space acquisition of important land. And there's a 600-acre parcel in New Lebanon that we, for years, have been working on to try to get the state to buy and to create a new state forest. It's a beautiful, beautiful forest with a lake, with great, it's just a great piece of land. And it's going to happen. They finally, it's been years, and it's taken a long time, but they're going to close on it in the next couple of months. And he cited that project, which they're now calling the Hand Hollow State Forest, as an example of the kind of projects that the state should be pursuing. Oh, so we felt good about that.
Well, that brings us maybe to the North Bay Recreation and Natural Area in Hudson, New York.
Yes.
And I'm holding in my hand this beautiful concept master plan, which is very impressive and obviously took a lot of work, time and energy and expertise to come to this. What's the next step in the North Bay project?
Well, the next step is we, this, as you said, is a concept master plan.
Mm-hmm.
This, you know, concept, we have no ownership, we have no control, we have no decision-making power over the destiny of this property. This is just what to us seems like a very good idea.
Who asked you to do this? Or
well,
did you do it all on your own?
No. You know, this is an idea that's been kicking around for quite a while. Mm-hmm. I can't say that we came up with this. I don't know where it came up. I think the idea has been talked about for more than 10 years.
Oh, it has, because Peter Murata, a resident, has talked about the North Bay forever.
That's right. And in the early part of the 2000s, there was a grant given by an organization called the Hudson River Foundation, I think to him or to an organization mm-hmm. that he controlled mm-hmm. to do a plan. The Hudson River Foundation supports things like this. I thought it was a great idea. And for whatever reason, they didn't get very much traction. Not a lot happened. And actually what happened is I got a call from the director of the Hudson River Foundation, and they had this grant money, and it had to be spent by a certain time or it was going to be lost. And he said, you know, we think this is just a great idea. Would you guys take this on? Would you do it? Would you do a study? And we were aware of this project, and we also thought it was a great idea. It kind of relates to our Greenport Conservation Area, which is one of our
right.
you know, signature conservation properties that we own. So we said, sure. And that's how it came about. And that was in 2007, I think, maybe. It's a long time ago. So we got this grant, and we ultimately were able to prepare the study. We hired a consulting firm to work with us and do some of the scientific ecological assessment work. And we published it, I think now, I'm sorry to say, it might have been almost 2 years ago. And we are very enthusiastic about it and very much hope that it happens. But in order for it to happen, the property is owned in principal part by two entities, the city and the county. And there's also a private parcel, which complicates things a little bit, right in the middle of it, that plant down there, which used to be called the Button Factory.
The Button Factory, yes.
So
I think that building is empty now.
I think it is, too. I believe that's correct. But in any event, the city and the county really need to decide, do they want to do this? And if so, how are they going to proceed? And, you know, that's, in fairness, that's a difficult decision. It's two entities, and it's I think we're getting close. So the next step is we have prepared with Council for the City and County a memorandum of understanding between the city and the county that's pretty simple, that basically just says, you know, we own half of it, you own half of it. We're aware that we think this is a good idea if it can happen. If it goes forward, the basic idea is the city has said that it would take primary responsibility to shepherd it through and to be responsible for it. The county has ongoing responsibility for the landfill and for the remediation of the landfill. Basically, it's a commitment to support the idea if, in fact, it proves feasible, and to support and to allow us to now go through a sort of a final planning stage to really look at the funding sources, to look at the permits that would be necessary to get to start any kind of construction, to reach out to the community and to have some significant community dialogue about the plan, to be sure that that there may be some aspects that people would like to see that we haven't thought of or that might want to see it happen. I think it could be a tremendous amenity for the city and as a whole, and certainly for the immediate community. I don't think that's debatable, but people may have ideas. The Charles Williams Park might come into play, how that could be improved or made nice. There might be ways the community could plug in by volunteering some of the work. And then we hope to come up with a plan to phase the work, to kind of open it sooner rather than later with an initial simple trail leading from Hudson to Greenport Conservation Area. And then that it be fleshed out over time as funding comes available and that kind of thing. And I think we would need another 6 to 12 or maybe a little more months to do the final planning, to get some permits together, just get funding together. And then the city and county would have to make an actual decision, yes, we want to do this, and that would be, of course, subject to CEQA and all of that. So, you know, I think we're pretty close, but it takes time to work through the processes.
Yes, it always does.
And we're very gung-ho. This could be a great, from just a conservation point of view, a tremendous grassland bird habitat. You know, the river is an important flyway. There's good birding there already, but if the planting was a little different, it would be a great habitat for that. It's beautiful views, as you probably know. And people could walk from Hudson up to Greenport.
I know. And then from Greenport to
Stockport. Stockport. The Harrier Hill.
Yeah.
Someday all the way to Rensselaer County. That's our hope. So it's a great project and could be a tremendous amenity, I think, for the city, for the county, and for the community. I think it's the kind of thing that brings people together.
Peter, if you'll excuse me for a second, sure. We have to do a little bit of business. We're talking with Peter Payden,
yes,
of the Columbia Land Conservancy. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM on your dial or WGXC.org. And we're back in the studio with Peter Payden of the Columbia Land Conservancy, who's been telling us all about the North Bay project as well as the general work done by the Columbia Land Conservancy. Ellen, you want to wrap this up?
Well, I think you just wrapped it up very neatly, except we need to thank Peter for coming in.
Yes, we do.
And it's always good to have you here and to hear more about the good work of the Columbia Land Conservancy. So I hope you'll come back anytime there's something you want the public to know, and we'll be happy to have you here.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure, and I actually love to come back because actually we're doing a number of things that I didn't even mention. So I'd be glad to come back and tell you some more.
Okay.
All right. Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Peter.
Thanks a lot.